turds. It's live from the five hole. Faxes from UncleDale.coms and the Sam Fells, but who's buying newsletters weekly podcast. I am Sam Fells, your host and author of said newsletter. You can find me on Blue Sky at Fells Gate. We are coming to you after the Olympics, but before the Olympic break is over, right here in the pocket with, Matt, you might have to help me here, Ridlin, Diddlin, and Country Fiddlin.
Ramblin', gamblin', and tons of lanolin.
Tons of lanolin. So, of course, we are in fatal four-way formation with the usual crew. Leading off, as always, with Dr. Viral. He is the biggest jackass, no talent in the business, and he's the CEO of WBCW on Wrestling Brain's Twitch channel every Monday night at 9 Central. You can find him on Blue Sky at Torque Penderloin. It's the imitable Andrew Cieslak.
You know what I always say, a son is just a homie that you make.
But we do make time for homies. He's working the ones and twos for us tonight. He's our supervising technician and our technical supervisor, as well as being Hollywood's go-to grizzled crank. You can find him on Blue Sky at Matt McClure, but please don't. It is Matt McClure.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan. And last but not least, he is the archivist. He is the goal line assassin. He is the oracle of Humboldt Park. You cannot find him on Blue Sky at Fifth Feather, but he might find you. He's lurking in the night. It is Fifth Feather John.
And I just had some Baja Fresh.
Is there one near you?
No. But I just watched that episode, so I needed to unleash it, because I know Andrew's a fan of that line.
Very much so.
Sometimes I feel like you and Slack just speak your own language. You guys just know things.
I don't think there's a
Baja
Fresh anymore.
No.
I think the Baja Freshes are gone.
If there is, Danny Wurtz knows all about it.
Yep. Right. He has
and they've replaced them with Qdoba's.
He has bought it for the Chuggo crew, what's left of it.
Whoever hasn't been laid off at Chuggo is still getting Baja Fresh.
So we are here between two worlds. The Olympics are over, but the NHL season has not restarted. John, I have one question, because you distinctly remember the 2010.
Oh, yes, of course. I play them all back in my head every morning when I wake up.
Yep, I often reference you when thinking about it, because you were the one who was so excited about it before it started. You got me excited about it. You were the one who said, you better, this Team USA might actually surprise some people, because it didn't look all that good on paper at the time, mm-hmm. But you were very excited. Now, after Sunday's game, and I've said what I have to say about all the aftermath, and if the other three want to chime in, they're more than welcome. But after Sunday, there was an aftermath to declare this the greatest hockey game of all time, the reason they do best on best on best. And I don't remember the 2010 gold medal game as well as I'd like to, but I remember that being a better game than this one.
I agree.
I agree.
Now,
as well.
Canada definitely had their dominant stretch in 2010, but the U.S. didn't turtle quite as badly that one as I remember.
No, and the U.S. tied it with less than a minute to go.
Yep.
I don't think the greatest game can have that big of a disparity in offensive zone time.
No, yeah. I don't think it can either.
End in 3-on-3.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to agree with him there, too.
Or only have one goal aside.
I think almost every vintage Hawks Kings Hawks Canucks game was better than that game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And that's I bet you like a neutral with those games stacked against each other would agree. Those games were unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was an exciting game. It led obviously. To you know
it was dramatic.
Result. Yeah, it was dramatic.
Well,
it had a result that.
Unmatched, right? That's the whole thing,
right. And it's the first time obviously it happened in I think all of our lifetimes. I don't know, Andrew, if you were around for 1980, if you, I don't know
just
you have much
barely
of
right
I was not
okay
no, that's February of 80. You're September of 80, right?
So
I've just been fucked right into my dad's or my mom's body, so that's,
a son is a homie that you make.
That's right.
So yeah, I mean, it was something that hasn't happened in any of our lifetimes, and so I don't think we're alone in that. There's a
that's
large
what you
segment
get out
of
a podcast here that you don't get anywhere else.
That's right.
Well, true, John. We did see the 1996 World Cup win, which I have argued.
Five people watched that.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. Come on.
And it was great, and it made helped make me the hockey fan that I am today.
Same. That was was legendary.
High drama. Yep. High drama for that. And that was also a best of three, right?
Yes, it was. And they won the last two games in Montreal.
Oh, bring me back.
And it was like right at the time that Brett Hull declared his citizenship for the USA after because he got cut from Canada or whatever. I can't remember what year now, but
they were not pleased.
Although this falls under the category of dominant offensive zone time, my favorite Olympic game is still the time that Belarus won that game
against Sweden.
Yeah, that was the best. That was so fun.
Was that 02 or 06?
That was 02. That was Salt Lake City.
I was in high school.
I was doing my year abroad.
Just one.
Very good. And it was Canada had been awful up until that point. And then they everyone's like, oh God, when they run into Sweden, it's gonna be trouble. And
their torpedo system, the Mike Martz.
They didn't have to run into Sweden at all.
Yeah, it was 02. In Salt Lake.
To Sam's question, though, if it was a different result, if Canada had won, I don't think people are declaring it the greatest game ever played or whatever the declaration was. So that right there scratches it off, off the list. Like, it should be something like Andrew said, where if it's
cross it off.
Yeah.
Cross it off.
If it depends on who wins the game, that it makes it the greatest game ever, then that can't be even qualified. Like, the Kings Hawks series,
the
all
actual
those games,
fucking miracle game,
right? All of those resulted in, if they had gone either way, it still would have been considered a great game. And even Canada had 46 shots on net, and the U.S. had 29 or something. And how many of those chances towards the end of the game where Canada had it up on a tee and just couldn't finish? I think that was the most enjoyable part for me, is it just felt like every other Canada U.S. game until it didn't. And it was similar again to what we just experienced with the Bears Packers and some other games in our lifetimes, where you're expecting a certain outcome and then it's the complete opposite happens. So that again was enjoyable. But I wouldn't declare it the greatest game ever.
I'm curious how this will be looked at as we go on here, because these all sort of stand alone now because they're so infrequent. Like, okay, in the juniors, they play pretty often, but, you know, that's no one. The mainstream doesn't care about that.
Right.
Nope.
So you have, you know, one. So you basically, even if you include 96, you have 96, you have 2010, you have 2002, I guess, 2014, and then this one. So, you know, you're talking about, five games over 30 years that are at this level that mean this much. But
you're
now you're going to get
four nations.
Right. Now you're going to get, if you want to throw that in, then that's still seven games over 30 years. You know, but now you're going to get them most likely every 2 years because they're going to do their World Cup. They're going to do the Olympics. That's going to keep happening. So I sort of wonder, you know, what the opinion of this one will be when you add in a few more, because I don't, you know, in 2 years' time, I don't see why that wouldn't be a Canada-U.S. final as well. I mean, it's hockey. Weird things happen. It could have been a U.S.-Czechia final, for all we know. Perhaps should have been.
Well, as they play more games, we're going to get those weirder results.
Yeah, so
that'll definitely happen. I think the other thing, go ahead.
I would think weird things would happen to the U.S. because now they're just going to be more bullish about picking their wonky roster. This obviously is why we won, because we took these jamokes.
Bill Guerin's a genius.
We got Trocheck to lose another draw. This was all part of the plan. We've got him out there for a face off. Oh wait, he lost it. Okay,
he lost
off
it.
The
now
ice.
It gets off the ice.
I mean, it was almost comical. I mean, every time he was out there for a face off, and Eddie said this is why he's on the team. He would lose the face off and he'd go off the ice. Now go sit down.
It's like they couldn't wait to reference. I know we're nitpicky about this, but yeah, every chance. And I think Eddie pokes Kenny Albert to mention it, like, "Hey, you have to hit this quota." Well, you represented, you know, the U.S. in 1984. Didn't the 84 team get their doors blown off?
They were considered one of the biggest embarrassments in U.S. hockey. And or disappointments, I should say, not embarrassments.
Right, and he didn't make – I guess he made one of the Canada Cup teams, but who was on – you know, who cares about those teams? Like, those 87 and 91 U.S. teams were bad.
Yeah.
You wanted to read – some junior teams.
Well, yeah,
right?
I think, you know, it's interesting, the U.S. program, as you reference those teams that Eddie was on that were, you know, completely clowned in these international tournaments. The U.S. hockey program itself hasn't made these leaps and bounds until, like, I would say there's a direct line that starts from the moment that they start that training development program in your Ann Arbor.
Right.
Then that opened in 98, I think. And or 98 or 99 was the first year that they had that NTDP. And pretty much since that point, after about, they got their first class through, so yeah, hold on. Let me effort here while I look up these rosters for you, Sam.
Okay.
Because I gotta read some guys' names for you, because I tell you, I barely remembered these clowns, and if you don't, I won't. But anyways, I mean, my larger point being, and we've talked about it, the U.S. hockey, like, they're not going anywhere now at this point, because they're as good as Canada. When it comes to the depth of the roster, it's, you know, obviously they couldn't match MacKinnon and McDavid. And really the only reason why they won that gold medal is because MacKinnon choked multiple times in that game.
And McDavid went a little hero mode in overtime.
Well,
right.
Yeah.
And you had MacKinnon miss that open net, which was obvious, but then also on the game winner, he easily could have not
trail
easily,
technique.
But, yeah, he backed off on Werenski, where if he just went for the puck, Werenski's not going to beat him one-on-one.
And now even
at worst,
caught.
You right. At worst, you chip it back behind your net and let your guys coming back come back and help out. You slow down the play, you slow down the rush. But yeah, he hesitated there, and that completely cost him, because then Werenski just kept coming, and that was that. And the game was over. So I thought MacKinnon really was a disappointment in that game for Team Canada. But hold on, I got the 2001 team. We can start there. Are you ready, Sam?
This is the 2001
U.S. National Junior Team roster.
Okay, and isn't this the team that won it for the first time, or is that the next year?
No. The first.
All right.
So,
keep in mind, they were fresh off 9/11, so they probably weren't feeling their best.
Okay.
The first team to win it was the 2004 team.
Okay, that was
I was in college.
Kessler...
I remember it was my senior year. Yeah, that was Kessler, Wisniewski, Mats Montoya.
Mats' close personal friend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
Patrick O'Sullivan.
Actually, hold on. Let me dial it back here. I wanted to go back to the – before we go to the 9/11 roster, we'll go 1999.
Okay.
Because that was a good one. Okay. Are you ready for these names?
I don't know that I am, but go ahead.
Okay. Matt Doman.
What?
Who the hell is he?
Yeah. Chris Madden.
Okay.
Doug Janik.
That's familiar.
Yeah. I think he was a Hawk legend.
Justin Morrison.
No.
Mike Pandolfo.
Yes.
Not Jay.
No,
Pandolfo.
Jay's brother.
Yeah.
Gotta be.
Yep. So how many are we on this list that we've recognized so far?
Half.
Technically,
one half.
Technically zero.
Mike Vigilante.
Yes.
Paul Mara.
Paul Mara was a pretty high draft pick, if I recall.
Yeah, Chad Paul Mara.
He was the captain of this team. Nikos Chelios. He did nothing. Turned out to be nothing. Jordan Leopold.
Traitor. Oh, no, the other one. No. That's the cousin. The Jake or Dean played for fucking China.
Jordan Leopold.
Yes.
Chris St. Croix.
No.
Tim Connolly.
Yes, of course.
David Leguand.
Yes.
Scott Gomez.
Okay.
And then scroll down a little further, then you got Brian Gianta. But other than that, you had about four or five names. I guess they're okay, but nobody here that kind of really blows your doors off. So then we go to the 2000 team. You ready for these, Sam?
You know it.
Okay. Okay, so there's some familiar names here.
Oh, I'm confusing Doug Janik with Doug Zmolek.
Some familiar names.
Ow. Too many Dougs.
So apparently the U.S. had the market cornered, thank you, on big, fat, slow defensemen. Ron Hainsey, Brooks Orpik,
wow.
Jordan Leopold, and then something named Pat Arifio, Jeff Gilson, Willie Levesk, Brad Winchester.
Didn't Orpik make it onto the 2010 Olympic team?
I believe he was there. And Hainsey.
Hainsey, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Brad Winchester on this roster. Brett Henning, Dan Kavanaugh, John Sabo.
Chris's brother.
Yeah, of course.
Andy Hilbert. I believe that was a Hawks legend, too.
Yeah, he definitely was. Too.
Yeah.
Jeff Tafe, also a Hawks legend. Patrick Jeff Foley, Tafe? Not the announcer. This is yeah. And then Rick. Well, yeah, I guess he wasn't announcing Hawk games at this point, so it could have been. Rick DiPietro was the goaler on this team.
Okay, so he was a bona fide NHLer.
So they got some okay guys on that team, okay, but not really.
What's the overall thesis here?
Just how bad these U.S. junior teams were up until about the start of the program.
Right. And now their junior team are basically NHLers.
Let me read you the roster of the team that was the first to win it. And that's 6 years now after the start of the NDTB. So you had Mark Stewart, Corey Potter, Matt Carl, Ryan Suter, Patrick Eves, Zach Parise, Jake Dowell, Ryan Kessler, James Wisniewski, David Booth, Al Montoya, and then a whole bunch of other guys. A
lot of super cool dudes on there. Ryan Kessler, David Booth in the news recently.
Yeah.
NHL careers.
Right. They all, that's my larger point, is that you had actual NHL talent on these rosters, not a couple guys who moonlit for a bunch for games because they were fat, slow, and stupid, and that was what people were looking for in their defensemen at the time. So I think it's just
no way to go through life, son.
You know, it's just it's a pretty clear correlation. I feel like that USA Hockey kind of put it together over the past 20 years or so that's the reason why they're as successful as they are now.
Well,
it's not because
the player pool has just grown. I mean, there are still systemic problems with what we all know about, but now the pool is coming from so many more places. I mean, Matthews grew up in Arizona. Other guys have grown up in California. There are players from Florida. You know, it's not just Michigan, Massachusetts, and Minnesota anymore.
Exactly. And you're pulling these kids into the program when they're super young and they're getting familiar with each other and they're playing together from the time that they're 10, 11 years old through, 20 to 26. And now they're, winning gold medals.
Right.
And so I think it's a testament to the success of USA Hockey, which I don't think a lot of people recognize. I think they just kind of see, well, there's just a lot of NHL players on it and they're good and they won. But this was a long and winding road to get there. It's interesting to think about in that regard.
I'd kind of be interested to hear what the U.S. junior roster was like 5 years ago.
Okay, you want to find out?
John, so, I'll pull that up for you.
It was the 25.
You'd have to go to 2022 because I don't think they had one in 2021.
Yeah, maybe go pre-COVID, I guess. Or you could go 2022.
Let's do pre-COVID. Pre-COVID.
So there would have been one that would have been the 2020 because it would have ended before the pandemic started.
That's true.
All right, so Kyle Keizer, Jack St. Ivani.
What?
Okay. Dylan Sandberg.
Yep.
Jack Hughes.
Okay.
Quinn Good Hughes. Story.
Yeah.
Sure.
Quinn Hughes.
There's enough right there.
Yeah.
Did they win?
Sasha Chmielewski, Tyler Madden, Ryan Poling. Here, let's get to some names that we know here. Jason Robertson.
Ooh,
my God.
Evan Barrett. This was one of the 12 years that Oliver Wahlstrom was on the team. Jack Drury, Keandre Miller.
Nice.
Spencer Knight. So.
Was he the starter?
Yeah, it looks that way.
That's cool.
So you had, just a.
The Hughes. Ziz.
Right. Them alone makes that a championship worthy team.
It's interesting how many players can make these highly competitive World Juniors rosters and just never be heard from ever.
I know that kind of blows my mind too. When I was looking back at the guys like around the age that I would have, that were the same age as us, to see some of those names and you're like, yeah, I recognized maybe a couple of them, but they were nowhere near becoming professional players.
I guess I'm curious to see if like the amount of NHL or the amount of players on the U.S. World Juniors roster that made the NHL is just steadily been increasing over time to speak to Sam's, you know, pool growth.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing too here, and I didn't look at this, but like you see, they also include like the NHL rights. So like this 2019 team, every player on it was at some point property of an NHL team. Like they were drafted,
right?
And were in a system. So yeah, I mean, no, everybody on the roster, because the two guys that say draft eligible were Jack Hughes and Spencer Knight, and they both got drafted. So everybody else on this team was in an NHL system. Yeah. And I think we've only recognized about half of them.
Well, 'cause we're stupid.
Right. But, and if you go back to like the teams that
slow, fat and stupid, I believe.
Like if you go back to the 9/11 team, I think you go down that list. I think there's only maybe five or six of those guys that were in an NHL system. You know, a lot of them were probably, they topped out at NCAA or juniors or whatever. And then they never were heard from again.
I mean, it still goes in waves, right? Because you had, if you go to the two or three years ago, the team that went back to back, most of those guys are now in an NHL system, I think. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year's crop, you know, all those guys age out, and this year's crop they felt was a little weak. So they can't, you know, but that even happens to Canada. You know, Canada shows up and you're like, this is not, you know, like it used to be like Canada would just roll out the top five picks.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't happen anymore. We need Russell back.
Yeah, that was in my yellow pad too. I think the only way you can get more juice, and Sam, to your point about you're playing every 2 years now, they gotta get Russia back involved in these tournaments.
Not going to.
No, I know they're not. But
I don't think Russia would even be that good.
No, but it's just, they bring juice. They bring juice to the tournament.
They do. They'd have the three best goalies, but the two best goalies.
They're all disgusting freaks, and they make life more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, who are you lining up on the blue line for Russia?
Well, it's an interesting experiment. I wonder if anybody did a hypothetical.
Someone, the Athletic did.
Did they?
Yeah. It was not impressive.
They were bringing back Boris Muranov. Did Kantsarov make it?
No, Kantsarov did not make it. All right. Well, as we pivot to what's ahead instead of what's behind, we will be burdened with Hawks hockey in a couple days here.
Thankfully not for too much longer.
And I just want to do a quick thought experiment that will almost sound like a defense of Kyle from Chicago. And it's somehow I'm trying to find new ways to talk about the Hawks because we end up doing the same show every time. So yeah, the rest of the season is basically, can they get Frank Nazar back from the land of wind and ghosts? And that's about it. We learned the lesson about guys who come over, play the last eight games, and are given Norris trophies. Or Calder trophies. You know, it'll be fun to see Frondell and Boisvert if he even gets here, which doesn't sound like he will. But whatever they do this year, we know enough to know, be like, okay, take it all with a grain of salt. So if we look ahead and we just Let's take them at their word, and we're going to put Bedard and Nazar 1-2 center spots. John, correct me if I'm wrong. That calculation means there's only four spots in the top six left.
Yeah. And you got Frondell and
And Frondell takes one, so that's three.
the aforementioned Kantsarov.
Well, we'll leave him aside, but we'll just put
Okay.
Frondell there for a second. So you have three spots.
Okay.
Now, I went on EP Ringside here, the Elite Prospects, whatever you want to call it. They track this shit better than anyone. So I'm just going to go through the 10 top forward prospects for the Hawks,
Okay.
which are Nathan Baim,
Yep. Okay.
Jack Pridham,
Okay.
Rick
The backup
Vanacker,
quarterback for Denver.
Kantsarov,
Okay.
Kayumov, who was Scott's Russian guy until Kantsarov, and he's lost
Correct.
that title. Nick Lardis, who we've seen.
Okay.
Slacks
And Rick
Mustard.
I was wondering
Mustard.
where you're going to mention Mustard.
He's a Vlachlav Nesterseal, who we saw a little bit.
My
Clear
guy.
cell.
Clear cell. AJ Spellacy.
Not my guy.
Spelacke.
Spalake. Spalake.
Spillake. Okay, so there's nine, right?
Nine.
Yes.
They only have to hit on a third of these. That wouldn't even be a good record. And yet.
And guess who's not good at this? So it's very possible.
It's
very
they've really only
possible.
kind of hit on one, and it was the most obvious one
Yeah,
fucking
right.
possible.
As far as we know, he's hit on one, and that
It
was
was
the
the
one
one you
that.
it was the biggest meatball down the middle in the history of meatballs.
Right. And we don't even know where that one plays yet. Exactly. We don't know if he's a forward or a center or a wing.
Which is less important than the idea that maybe all these guys stink. But go on.
I was just sort of looking at him like, well, we keep saying, we gotta wait, we gotta wait. Well, you should, if you only need three guys, and they really do. They should know who those three guys are right now, right? It's like
Probably.
these.
We're
Yes.
veering into similar show
We
territory at this
are.
point, so
I
pause
don't know what
back.
else to do, Slack. I'm just saying, but like, he only has to bat, and they're gonna add another top five pick come
Okay, I'll
May.
play along. If Lardis becomes a 25 goal scorer, which I
Yep.
don't think is crazy,
I don't think it is either.
I think
But they
he's
won't
better
let
than
him.
Frank Nazar at this point. Whatever. Does that count as a hit for you?
Oh, sure. Third round pick. Yeah.
Okay. But you need to hit on some of these top end guys.
Yeah,
I
that's
mean,
where you're going to make the difference. Or you need
right.
somebody to become a top end guy, is basically what I'm
Correct.
saying.
Right. Well,
Yeah.
you either need Frondell to live up to his draft status.
He's the third pick overall, and the last guy we picked three is ass. So that's
Wait,
a
which
little
one was
terrifying.
three?
Doc.
Doc.
Doc. Oh, yeah. Terrible.
Horrible. No
Oh,
good, very
no.
bad day.
I mean, it is the same show, but I wanted to provide some note of optimism here, where like they don't, they're like, oh, look at all these kids. Well, they don't have to hit on a lot of them. They don't even have to hit on most of them, half of them.
And then the rest is filled in with like what? Flotsam and jetsam from all
I
over
mean,
the.
they fill in the third and fourth lines. They age out of their initial contracts in the AHL. I don't know.
Okay.
You package them for what you do need. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose, like that's the other thing. Like when is I know we've seen we talk about the Seth Jones trade, which was really born out of the necessity of Seth Jones saying, "Get me the fuck out of here."
Right.
Other than that, like what aggressive moves are we seeing? We haven't seen any yet because it's not time, and it feels like it's never going to be time. But that's what I want to see is like, what does a aggressive trade from Kyle Davidson look like? We just haven't seen one, and you can argue that there's no reason to have seen one, but I wonder if I'm ever going to see one.
Well, I mean, there was reason to see one, as it was John Scotier. He looked pretty nice here now.
Okay, I should say there's he's. He hasn't made one for his
He hasn't
reasons,
made one for the Hawks
not
yet.
our
No.
reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's been forced into a couple. He's been part of aggressive trades. They just didn't tell him that it
Yeah.
was an aggressive trade.
He was the third man in, as they say.
Indeed, he was. I was reading Scott, our friend Scott's things he was looking for in the last 2 months of the season post or last 6 weeks. And a lot of it was
a
about
microwave
Nazar.
Big enough to put your head into?
Yes. And there was a line in there about, well, they need to find a way to spring Nazar on breakaways again. Is that something you can plan for?
No,
is
that like, it's not a thing.
It's
no.
not a thing,
it's,
right?
It's called cherry picking, and it's frowned upon even in the Fed at Johnny's.
They should find a way to get 50 breakaways a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great. I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell people about the last 20 games here.
The only thing I can hope is that whoever, you know, is that the time off has given Frank Nazar and Connor Bedard enough time to feel better physically so they don't have these excuses.
Right. If you suck now, you just suck.
Yeah, especially because you're going through the doldrums and half the teams are locked in and probably don't give a shit. So you can take advantage of that if you're, you know, in the right mindset. And you're
at least presumably, Bedard has got a paycheck to play for. I mean, it's coming one way or the other, but like you know,
still no word on any of that.
Nope.
Was there a moratorium during? Was there an embargo?
No,
on,
I mean they could have signed him. That's not a roster move.
I think he's just waiting to. He's probably telling, you know, let me finish strong, and then we're not going to do it now.
Right. I can't go anywhere anyway.
Right. Try to get hot for the next 3 months and then negotiate. I'm sure that's what he's hoping for. If he plays like he did in the first couple months, I mean, great. I have something to watch. That would be nice.
Right.
That makes the whole thing better.
If we get 2 weeks into this and then, you know, 2 weeks into March and then Nazar and Rinzel, you know, start playing well and light it up again, it's like, well, great. We're back where we started.
Yeah, and then if you know, at that point, I guess one of the two.
Well, I guess
we'll
have to see, and we'll have to see too, which of these goddamn fucking loser veterans they unload to.
Right.
Because I can't deal with another fucking Connor Murphy as it weathered everything here. He signed the contract. He didn't have to, you know, he's gotten a raw deal in some respects, you know, going back to Quenneville, but like, it's loser shit. Get him out of here.
Upstairs.
What are the more really bummers of a career that you could have? I know he's made money and good for him, but goddamn, man. He is
Arizona
not
to here.
He's not an ounce of fun in his entire career.
You show up here, your coach immediately hates you and won't play you.
Ugh, God.
He gets fired.
And then you have a beautiful idiot that is giving speeches from the toilet.
He would have fit right in at these Olympics.
With Coach Bitcoin?
Coach Bitcoin.
Yeah. Scales and tokens.
For those who might not understand, John didn't think much
what
of
is this,
the
Egyptian
women's coach.
Okay. All right.
The women's coach pregame speech. I don't know his name. I'm sorry.
It was
John
Robleski.
Robleski?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. John, not a huge fan of his pregame motivation.
Well, nobody's really. Even Sullivan's kind of sucked.
Yeah, Sullivan's wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, it was just very general. All right, get out there. Move quick. Make your decisions fast. Yeah, thanks, coach. But I mean, I guess what are they going to say at this point? You're talking to a bunch of professionals.
Look, as long as they do it from not the bathroom, I don't really care.
Yeah, they weren't in the bathroom, but the women's coach, boy, that was a weird one. He just kept rambling Ray Rectum.
He's a rambling man.
He was a mess. I don't know if you saw his reaction. When
oh yeah,
he was like, holy fuck, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
He looked like the most relieved man on earth. Anyway,
yeah, that must have been part of it because, and I don't mean to criticize, but like, you know, this U.S. team had been rolling over everyone, including Canada.
Yeah, they killed them, but they did like, the whole thing that, like we always say, they let you do whatever they want in the round robin game, and then that's,
right, they even threw in the extra ring because they have that yearly series they play, and U.S. just steamrolled them in that, and they were still okie doking them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let give them a chance to have Poulin kill you, which
no.
She could
almost
have twice.
If it wasn't for Abby Murphy on the
Abby
back
Murphy
check,
fucked
yeah.
up. She fucked yeah. up and saved it. But that was like heading towards she's the scapegoat for the entire fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have been ugly.
Excommunicated from Evergreen Park.
Well, they don't execute, they're busy. They don't excommunicate anybody.
Well, I mean, they're protecting women's sports down there.
Right.
That's in Orland Park.
You can tell how much everyone cares about women's sports by them laughing at them when it comes to being invited to the White House. So obviously they care deeply about women's sports.
Mm-hmm.
Ask anyone you work with if the WNBA players deserve a fair deal and watch them laugh in your face. That's how much people care about women's sports. Sidebar.
Go ahead.
That's it. I'm just saying. Piece. People are fucking assholes. That's what it comes down to.
John apparently has some prime AFS chum.
Yes, we are going to effort right now. And we were talking about the Hawks prospects, Sam, and you did not have Gavin Hayes listed as one of the top nine prospects.
No, no more. No and Hayes. Yet.
And yet he is emulating Zach Hyman in Rockford, who, by the way, we checked the standings today, kids. Rockford, every team makes the playoffs except Rockford this year in the AHL.
Yeah, how's that for a fucking mark on Kyle from fucking Chicago's record? Where you're supposed to have the best pipeline and they can't do, they fucking suck shit. And
all this talk about Gavin Hayes and he's rediscovered what it is to be a man and he's got 12 goals.
Yep.
I just spoonerized his name in my head, and it's pretty good. I can't say it out loud.
I got it. I can get it from here.
Okay. Zach Hyman, let me just read this for you real quick here. Rookie year, 16 games, 6 points. Second year, 82 games, 28 points. Third year, 82 games, 40 points. 41 points, 37 points, 33 points. We're 7 years into his career, and he sucks.
Though... I mean, standing next to that guy will get you paid and make you, I believe.
Okay, but I'm saying that didn't happen until 8 years into his career.
I believe that makes him, too, the all-time single-season tribesman goal-scoring leader, too. I think he passes Mike Camilleri by open lengths there.
He's got 252 career goals. I guess my point is, why would you say you're emulating your career after a guy who took 8 years to get started?
Because he's just the hot name du jour. And he's big, and Charles Barkley is friends with
him.
He's
Max Mattson.
Yeah. And so now every Hawks prospect now is going to emulate Zach Hyman. Because as the kids, the freaks chime in, also apparently Merrick Vanacker, another Hawks prospect, is emulating Zach Hyman as his stylistic mode as well for the OHL team Brantford that he plays for.
To stand there and not fall on your own dick while the greatest hockey player probably to ever live finds you? Yeah, that's a good strategy.
So we've got a bunch of Zach Hymans on the way? Is that where...
Yep. That's the guy we're emulating. And the Redditors are all on board with it. And don't worry, Schwartz Hockey was at the Rockford game that he scored a hat trick at. So
3 of his 11 goals are concentrated in one game then? So
yeah.
He's got...
Yeah. Efforting.
God. By the way, they have the Iowa Wild beat.
Barely.
That's it.
Barely.
But...
Don't they still have like 6 columns worth of standings too in the A?
Yeah, they have to do it by points per game because the teams out west don't play as many. I think.
What a league.
What a man.
That's where you want to be spending extra time to develop and hone your craft. This is a serious organization like the American
Hockey League. He has 22 points in 49 games. Or 9 goals in the other 48 games for Rockford. Cool. Sign me up.
Destined for greatness.
He's got a hot stick.
Really good stuff.
You know, it takes a big person for, you know, for Kyle Davidson not to do I told you so's like every week.
Wait, is Schwartzfest or whatever his fucking name is not going to give us like the full breakdown of the...
Oh, no, he just said he was at the game. He scored a hat trick. The Hogs lost, but he looked great.
Okay, great. Who were they playing?
I don't know. Iowa, probably. I think they were playing Iowa.
Okay, well,
the other worst team in the league.
The Bakersfield pin setters.
Wait, isn't Iowa the one, the Slovakian goalie with the 868 plays for?
Yes. Hmm? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So that's where Korchinski's been spending his whole season, and Rinzel most of his.
Yes, that's where they're learning the game. They're learning the craft.
And that's where, you know, that's where Slack's Lardis had to go. And, you know, he had to go pepper the Slovakian Olympian.
Well, Korch is back up now, which is cool.
Korch is back up. Whether he plays or not.
Yeah, it was how long until he's fucking healthy scratched?
Thursday.
Yeah.
Unless they do the 7D man thing again.
Well, Artie's going to be scratched still, no?
I think they're probably, I think they probably put him back in the lineup. How long of a break does he need? He got 3 weeks off.
Scott says that he's going to be back in the lineup.
Great.
Back in groove.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's something to watch, even though it is really, really depressing more than anything.
Well, not if he's good.
Yeah, maybe he'll magically turn good.
Although I have, they've said like, oh, we got to work with him on his shot. We got to make, you know, his shot more punishing, you know, more dangerous. It's like, isn't that something at the NHL, by the time you get to the NHL, that's just something you tweak?
Like, Petri Contiola have a shooting school?
He's at the Cam Barker shooting school.
Cam Barker showed up. He had a cannon right from the word go.
Mm-hmm.
Might not know where it's going. It might take him forever to get it off, but he had one. I don't know. It just goes to my theory. They just draft whoever skates the fastest. They're combine guys. they have their guys skate a 40.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah, it's a 3.7. He draft him.
And then don't develop any of it.
No, absolutely not. Anyway, all right. Let's do a cleanse. John wants to do a cleanse. Slack wants to do a cleanse. They have happy Bears combine thoughts. Speaking of the combine,
King of the Segway here. The combine itself.
But
Ryan Poles are talking. And that's,
Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson, we're at a microphone. We haven't heard from them for months, and thankfully, you don't need to. But they had stuff to say. John, take it away.
Ben was on with Florio today, and Florio gave him ample opportunities to keep walking back the Packer stuff, and Ben was having none of it.
God, is he the best?
He said, "Who likes the Packers?"
No one.
Nobody. And Florio it's just so great.
You know who else doesn't like the Packers? Mike Florio. He's a Vikings fan.
Right. It's just so great that the Bears have a coach who thinks and acts like us.
Coach like us, thank God.
But yeah, no, thank God. just has a similar mindset when it comes to the Packers. he's not going to Marquette games with LaFleur.
No.
No interest in that. So, you know, I enjoyed that. And we talked about this in the real show, but all the chitter chatter about Bagent was interesting. Andrew in his tea leaves suggested that Ben's already said goodbye.
Sounded that way.
It sounds like they're, to use an Andrewism, it sounds like they're pumping his tits.
They are pumping his tits. They're pounding the table for tits
at the podium.
The NFL podcast that I listen to, Tanier and Lombardo. I know, no Italians. they were talking about this, and they made it sound like this was the Bears trying to create any market. Not that there hadn't been calls, but they sense a down QB market. They have this guy who's kind of a mystery, which can always fool teams into thinking he's more than he is, especially put that Ben Johnson shine in him. So they showed to the combine like, oh yeah, we're getting calls. The calls is their agent, is his agent, and probably his dad.
Yeah.
Saying, can you get my guy out of here?
Well, that's fine. It's
fine if it works.
That's good work. Yeah, it's good work that they're doing. I mean, they already had somebody doing the work for him with that Arizona reporter that said that the Cardinals were kicking the tires on pumping his tits. So
that's a lot of different things going on there.
He's pounding the table by pumping his tits.
He's pounding the table by kicking the tires on his tits. They need to be pumped.
It's got to be your bowl. If that's the case, that's also still an encouraging sign to me that the Bears are doing that.
The Bears are finally looking to take advantage of the stupid football executive, which is 95% of the league.
Right.
Right. And it's not. And it's usually them.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be every.
Um, Yeah, I mean,
Mike Williams at wide receiver. Come on down. Size 17 shoes.
As Matt said in the real show, if you turn an undrafted free agent and you turn in any draft pick, basically you made out on the deal.
Yeah, it's good.
Other than that, it's just good to see Ben back in our lives.
Yeah, he hasn't slept since the Rams.
No.
Walked off Soldier Field with the win.
He's still pissed.
He said he hasn't watched the game, which is awesome.
I mean, he doesn't have to.
Oh, it's great. He just said, I'm not watching every night. Shit. Yeah, he's probably can watch it back in his eyes with no problem.
I don't know if I believe him that he hasn't watched that game, but I believe him.
It wouldn't
surprise me.
Yeah. I don't, because like they're not going through it with the team like they would on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know what? I don't have, he'll probably get to it before training camp, I would imagine.
He probably thought, you know what? Half these fucking guys aren't going to be here. So I don't know. Yeah.
What's the point?
What's the point? Because they show up and they just clean out the lockers. So, yeah. You know, you're doing that for yourself.
So bring it back to the real show. Did we get any closure on the rosterbation that we were doing? Did Trent Williams get cut?
Not yet.
Not yet.
It's heavily rumored that unless they reach some kind of restructuring deal, that he would get cut. And in my educated or uneducated guess would suggest that he would seek to win and therefore not be demanding of a restrictive salary in that regard.
Yeah, there's only a handful of teams that I think that would make sense for him, and I think the Bears would be one of them.
Bears are absolutely at the top of that list.
Right.
They have to be. They have a need. Right. He'd walk right in. He'd start day one.
Yep. Well, I mean, he starts no-brainer. He walks into Canton day one. Like, he starts everywhere day one.
Mm-hmm. And he slides
right in, but, like, why wouldn't you want to play next to Tooney then also? Like, that's a Hall of Fame side of your fucking line out of nowhere.
And the Bears could probably, whatever the disagreement is between the Niners and him, I'm assuming that the Bears could find the room to.
It's not really a disagreement. They just cannot afford to pay him.
Yeah, it's the cap number. He's under contract. It's right. just like right, and right. he won't and he like there he won't renegotiate.
Yeah. So then maybe it sounds to me like maybe he just wants out. He sees that thing coming to an end, and wants to end his career somewhere where he might win.
Maybe he's tired of blocking for a hill rod cracker Jesus freak that everyone hates and thinks is a fraud.
Yeah, could be that too. I mean, but yeah,
maybe
I mean,
maybe he'd prefer to like let Myles Garrett pull a Mason Rudolph on him.
Trent Williams was the guy that I was thinking of. Like, he's the ideal candidate as we laid out scenarios for the left tackle solution. And this may have been on the real show or on this show.
It was on the real show because we haven't had Bears Corner or the show in your head, definitely.
Yeah, he was the ideal candidate for if you're going to find a veteran on a 1 to 2 year deal as kind of a holdover. That would be that.
The hope is just that he's not Orlando Pace again.
Even that, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Orlando Pace, I feel like probably wasn't done any favors by Martz and the scheme that they were running here. And in addition to Martz treating him as though he was 25-year-old Orlando Pace and not 33 or 34, whatever he was when he was here.
78-year-old Orlando Pace. Mm-hmm.
Those knees were definitely 78.
Yeah. Williams is the ideal for if you're going to do the stopgap solution. If you're going to maybe trade for a guy, I'd have to look through some depth charts there or, you know, draft a guy because polls reiterated today that it doesn't sound like Ozzie's going to contribute at all next year.
They're not counting on it.
And they're not counting
on
it. Right.
You can't.
Right. Right. So they definitely need to find something. And if Trent Williams becomes available, it seems like a perfect fit. Like I'm sure there could be some other team that comes out of left field that would potentially sway him, but I don't know of any other team that would the piece would fit as well.
That the two main people again, and the two main people that he'd be working the most directly next to, one on his right and one behind him, is Caleb and Joe Tooney. Like, and a real chance to do something next year. Like, I don't see why you wouldn't. if they can make even a slightly, a mostly competitive offer in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to comment on the little nugget we've been talking about on the real show that George and Kevin Warren might not be seeing eye to eye?
Well, I mean, I don't think that that's any kind of secret. It's pretty easy to discern with listening to the Fishbane episode of Bernstein Football Corner.
Well, I didn't hear it. For those who didn't hear, you want to give us the cliff notes?
Just basically that Kyle Warren.
God, we're mixing.
Kevin Warren, basically that Bernstein said that, and there wasn't any pushback from Fishbane saying that that's inaccurate. Someone who's in the building, that Kevin Warren has hired everyone and their brother to work in the PR and all this stuff, and he could get all the correct advice in the world. He just does what he wants anyway. So that kind of gives the indication that he might be given full autonomy from George, and that he might be working counter to things George has expressed that he wants, namely the fact that it came out too. Was it from John's fellow archivist Jack Silverstein that the old man wanted to buy property in Arlington Heights as early as like 1975?
The 60s, I think he identified that area.
It was the 70s. I definitely looked at it.
They lived out there. They lived in Mount Prospect. They went to church at St. Emily's.
Peyton's Hill was in Arlington Heights. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken,
it was. Mm-hmm.
I thought Ginny lived in Des Plaines still, but I mean still that.
Yeah,
that
Des Plaines, area. Mount Prospect,
along the Route 14 Northwest Highway corridor.
Indeed,
she's a big fan of Paradise Pup.
And so they wanted to have that. Well, they liked that plot of land because I think it was close to where they lived.
Huge,
and also they foresaw creating their own little city there, Bears City. And the way that Dan laid it out is basically like, you know, George is not the type of person that's going to take his grandfather's vision and kick it to the side and say, we'll go to Hammond, Indiana.
You could say a lot of things about them and besmirching the old man's legacy, but like that one, I don't think. Like,
right,
George,
right.
It's more indirectly and yet still in good faith.
George is never moving this team to Indiana. However,
it's a toxic fucking waste dump.
If he fires Kevin Warren before any stadium deal is like official, I'll be so happy. You can go ahead and move to Indiana. I don't care.
I'll have a lot more respect for them as a family, as a governing body, if that happens.
Right. Like, look, we owe Kevin Warren this much, that when it's time to go to coach, he's like, look, we're going to go get the best guy.
Yeah, but how much did he do?
It's impossible to know. But
it's impossible to know.
Napoleon,
he certainly was in the room and he was looking it over, and I'm sure he wants the credit. But it was obviously driven by him. Like, this is our guy. This is who
we're
getting.
Ben literally pulled out of the Washington job when he saw that they were keeping dipshit Flues, trying to wait it out even more. Like, this didn't happen on accident by Ben's part. He wasn't that wild.
No, it didn't. But they did get it done. You know, however involved he was, he didn't fuck that up.
It was a great process, according to Ben Johnson's agent.
For most of what I read, what they presented to prospective coaches was better than what any other team. Like, if this was normal Bears thing, and Ben's like, I want this job, and then he sees the clowns, you know, that usually run Halas Hall, mm-hmm. he would have been like, maybe I don't want this job. So whatever they presented, they looked professional enough where Ben's like, I can go in there and win.
Do you think it'd be like the clown vision that Homer gets, where he's got clown college on the brain and everyone's on fire, but then it looks like the clowns
basically.
Like doing a routine on the ground.
Whatever. Now, the fact that Kevin makes sure he's in the shot for every post-game speech leads me to believe he wasn't that involved in hiring Ben Johnson. Like, he's still trying to glom off. Mm-hmm. But if he, like, we need you to come in and build, get us a stadium. We've got this land here. And then he can't even do that. That would just
Well, it seems like, and the more this, the longer this goes on, the more it seems like he doesn't want the Arlington, he doesn't want to build in Arlington Heights because he wasn't part of the group when they bought the land. So he feels like he needs to put his own stamp on
it. Not his idea.
Yeah. The other thing too that Dan mentioned that was interesting was that apparently in Hallis Hall there's like these siloed conversations happening which sounds like to me like some people are hearing one thing and other people are hearing another, which I think also would irritate George in that if, you know, it should be very clear what their goals are here. So the fact that if people are hearing two different things or not understanding why, and again, like that statement that the Bears put out did seem a little odd in hindsight, even in the moment, like why are they even saying anything about this Indiana thing right now? Because then it just added fuel to the fire.
Right. And also the Indiana governor is pretty unpopular. Like the Indiana Congress could just be like, no, we're not doing this. And then where are you going to go?
Right.
Did you guys see his
yeah, I did. It was like 22%.
It's like 23% or something.
It's lower than Trump's. Yeah. It's so bad.
Well, they don't care.
We're not dealing with a full deck of cards here.
Yeah. They don't, they don't care. They're still going to pump this like it's happening. And
yeah, almost none of it makes any logical sense if you think about it for 2 seconds, but they don't think you're smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think people in Indiana are.
We know they're not. They can't read.
All right. Well,
awful state.
Nice to get some Bears glow onto things.
They are the light, Sam.
They are the light. We will turn to the kids. Our protege, Dave Melton, has Trader's Corner question for Slack.
Lovely.
And John.
Outstanding.
How do you guys deal with all the long, drawn-out moments, like when they spend 10 minutes arriving for breakfast? I feel like I can't fast-forward because I'll miss something, but I also sometimes give up watching it during those moments.
Okay, first of all, there's two things that you need to know about Trader's. Actually, there's one big thing you need to know about Trader's. When they're doing the game, that's called phone time. Get your phone out. Do what you got to do.
You're waiting for everyone to be a catty bitch at one another, basically.
Yeah, you don't have to like watch each thing like a hawk. You get the gist of it. I feel like I'm pretty in tune with what's going on, and I definitely am on second screen during the game part. I think they need to fix that part of the show, make it more consequential.
The breakfast part, you mean?
No, well, the breakfast is, it also qualifies like that, plus when they're out doing the competition, like I'm half watching.
Yeah, they've gotten better with them as it's gone on, the challenges or whatever. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is kind of pointless. The whole show is the round table.
Yeah, it's the best. It's worth it.
Yeah, and the murders. Those are the two parts of the show that are... that are what make it. Everything else is yeah, phone time, as Andrew says.
Not Yaha time.
It's phone time. The challenges, I will say, they're better. They've made them better this season, I thought.
There were some, like the one where Rob just put Tara's name up every time, which was genius. That had an effect on the game. Like that shook things up. Like they need more games where it's less about like putting money in the pot, because these are celebrities and I genuinely don't think they give a shit about the money, even if it's for charity.
Yeah.
They want to win because they're competitive, usually game players. Especially when they have the survivor people and the folks who play contest games.
That's a great point. Making the traders do stuff during the challenges is a wrinkle that adds something to it, to where in the previous seasons they weren't doing stuff like that. It affects the round table, it affects other aspects of the game. So I would say if they keep incorporating things like that and bringing that into it, it would make it better. But I mean, for the most part, it's all round table and murder. That's the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Also, they need to bring Johnny and Tara back to the Kentucky Derby and station them next to Eddie again, because that was just wonderful television.
Yes, always.
That was the only question I had.
Okay,
I didn't on get my any, feed because so. I was late.
Since it's Trader's Corner, Andrew had a theory that he wanted to run past. I think during Trader's Corner,
I thought I worked out how the game's going to go, or what I think should happen, which is you have to murder Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to basically, because Johnny and Terra always are going to vote together. So you cannot go to that final fire part, you know, where you throw the colored things in.
Yeah.
You can't go to that game with those two in it because they will never vote each other off. So if you have extra votes, if you're Rob or if you're Eric, you know what I'm saying? They're just going to, they're never going to vote each other off. So they're going to vote you off. So you have to get one of them out so they can't vote together.
And how does it work with the fire vote? Like
everybody has to throw a bag into the fire. And if it's, everyone has to vote the same. So if it's green, you're ready to go ahead to the final and say who's a traitor and who's not. Mm-hmm. Or if it's red, you have to vote again. So everyone has to pick somebody to banish.
Okay.
And once the banishing is done, they can reveal. So you all have to agree to stop banishing for the game to end.
Right, right. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Johnny and Tara are obviously faithful. So they know that Rob's, well, I shouldn't say they know, but they're on to Rob.
Johnny seemed Rob. At the last episode.
Johnny knows Rob.
Yeah,
and Eric,
he had it pegged. Yeah.
Which is why you have to kill him.
Right.
And then you banish. I think if you're Rob, you banish Eric. Then you're like, oh, we got the last traitor. And then you go to the finale or the final part. And I think everybody could feel pretty good about moving forward.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I was thinking that he's going to murder Mark and then he'll just use Johnny and Tara as the traitors. Like he'll just be like, no, it's them two. Look, they got Eric out. Now they're going to banish us. And
then
he can use that as his, as a scapegoat. So then whatever the fuck her name is, the Tinker, she'll go right along with that plan. And then he'll take it to the end.
Useless. She's completely useless. He's got her wrapped around her finger.
Yeah. But anyways, we'll see what happens on Thursday. It's been an interesting season. It's always enjoyable and it's stupid. It's stupid enjoyment. That's all it is.
Yeah.
All right. So Andrew, do you have any?
No, I didn't get any.
All right. I've got John's guy headphone, Easy Rider / crypto fart coin. Which one of America's hockey garbage sons would you most like to kick in the nuts? And is there a historical precedent of a U.S. government official pouring champagne all over his own head while celebrating a team takes turns spit painting the commander in chief over teleconference? No, I guess there's no precedent for that.
The garbage sons to kick in the newts, I think Matthew and Brady.
I mean, yeah,
they're, right.
I would think.
Is there anybody else in the team picture there?
I mean,
I think Max Domi is still on the list for me.
Okay.
He's not American, though.
I don't care.
I mean, I would say Brady over Matthew. At least Matthew's like won some shit. Well, I guess Brady now has.
I'm just getting real tired of their shit in general.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond just, you know, the off-ice crap. It's the stuff on the ice and they're yapping. And I mean, it's
at least Brady's fuck ugly and he's got a terrible hairline for a 24-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the stuff with like it just feels so rehearsed and like performative, like talking shit to Dreisaitl during the Olympics, like. Dude, he's on a team with like 11 guys that play professionally in Europe, and you're on a team with a bunch of Hall of Famers. Like, what are you doing? Why are you yapping at him?
Right. I mean, like he and McDavid drag. Like, look at the rest of that Edmonton team. It's terrible.
Right. They just like shut up.
Yeah. The problem with the Kitchucks is like we know. Okay, not being from the St. Louis suburbs isn't helping.
No.
But.
In fact, it probably molded who they are.
Yeah, it's a perfect place for them to be from.
Yeah, these are just two kids who grew up so rich and so talented because of their genes that they've never been told to shut the fuck up. They've never had to answer for anything. So they get the, you know, and look, they're great players and it's not just genes. They worked really, and it's not just the money. They, you know, they worked harder, as hard as anyone to get where they are. But like, even when they were 6 or 7, no one could tell them to shut the fuck up. Right? Like,
right.
You'd be dealing with that. And their dad's a moron, too. I don't care what Eddie Hilchick has to say.
Well, especially if Eddie's co-signing on him. Then he's definitely a moron.
Yeah, for sure. But he still would have probably got the Hawks a cup.
And then far as government officials pouring beer on their tits.
Not pumping them.
No, not pumping them. I'm trying to think in the 30s if there was anybody doing it, but I doubt it. There certainly weren't cameras around for it.
Did that get depicted in Death by Lightning? I still haven't gotten to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe Shea Whigham's character did it. Andrew, I can't remember.
What was the question?
About a government official pouring beer all over themselves.
No, government officials
in a hockey celebration.
Yeah. Right.
Specifically. No.
Government officials celebration. Pour booze over themselves in like a Vegas club, not like, you know.
Yeah.
In a long, like, so.
Chester Arthur just smoked opium probably at his desk.
Right. Yeah. No, Chester Arthur, yeah, he was pounding booze, but there was no sports teams back in the 1800s for him to party with. Maybe the Cincinnati Redlegs or whatever the hell they're called.
Abner Doubleday's New York Metropolitans or whatever.
All right, and then the only other one I have is also team related, or US Team USA related. Jeff, the other Jeff Hicks, would Team USA be able to field a full team of decent human beings that by chance play pro hockey? No, and you need to get that out of your head that any professional sports team has, like, everyone needs to, like, really take a look. Like, no team is going to have good people on it. Like, there might be one or two, but, like, no, professional athletes are, by and large, pieces of shit. And so, yeah, there's no team that has got that is a team full of decent human beings.
Yeah, we do this every team that wins a championship now is like, oh, they're going to go to the White House, and then they go to the White House, and everyone's like, I can't believe they went to the White House. Like,
except for the NBA team.
Right.
They never go.
Well, they haven't gone in years, have they?
I don't know.
Not for this asshole.
Let me take a look. But I mean, Saquon was, you know, playing golf with the guy solo. So, like, you know, the woke Eagles did go, for those wondering.
Philadelphia, it's the woke capital of the universe. That's right. Mayor Gritty.
Or what was the,
he's a socialist.
When I made fun of the Patriots fan, Boston hates Trump. Get a new slant. Okay. Sure. Nobody in Boston likes Trump. Not one person. Cool. Also, the game's not in Boston. It's in Foxborough, you fucking idiot. Okay. I don't get the sense that the Oklahoma City Thunder visited the White House after winning the championship. They toured the White House with Biden.
Right. That was before.
That doesn't count.
Doesn't count. Anyway, doesn't matter. All right. That is our show. We will be back maybe next week. We'll see.
Probably not.
Probably not. So until we ever, whenever we reconvene, for Slack, for John, for Matt, I am Sam. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. Please rate, review, share, and subscribe. Until next week, top guys.